This is Your Q, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thank you very much for joining us. Tiffany, great to see you. We've got a great panel of professionals here with us today.
Yes, we do.
Thank you very much for being here. We're looking forward to have you introduce yourselves in a minute. Before we start, however, you have something of an announcement for our listeners today, and I'm going to give you just a few minutes to talk about that.
I do. Thank you. I am running for city council for the city of Roseburg. So the Federal Communications Commission has an equal opportunity policy that we ran into with broadcasting. And so this will be my last episode until after Election Day. So I, it's a little bittersweet. I'm going to miss hanging out with you.
Yeah,
being
ditto.
On the program. I'm so excited that you guys are here to, you know, enjoy this last episode for me for a while.
Well, I appreciate that. And thank you for your interest in public service. And we do appreciate the focus on, you know, care and celebrating the community and finding ways to uplift and educate. And I think there's an opportunity that to do that even outside the show. So we'll miss you in the interim. And but we're going to enjoy the last episode for a little while with you today. So thank you very much.
And thank you.
Of course. Well, we've got some community heroes here that are dedicating their life and their summertime and this beautiful summer to help our students and families and community be successful. And so I want to welcome each of you. Thank you very much. People who have dedicated their professional life to uplift in our community with a focus on our families and community. So thank you very much for being here. I'd love to give you just a minute to introduce yourself. Christine, let's go ahead and start with you.
My name is Christine Ostemore. I've been teaching 26 years. I'm the learning specialist at Green now, but my rest of my career was all in kindergarten and first grade. So all the nuts and bolts of reading and math. And I've been in Roseburg for 7 years now. So I love Green. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anybody that teaches early elementary, I always say, I want to polish your halo. I taught in middle school and high school and community college and university level. I was never good enough to teach in elementary, I don't think, personally, but I would have loved to. I was an elementary principal for a number of years, so I kind of like was there, but early elementary teachers, some of my heroes in life. So thank you very much
really
for that.
Really building the foundations and, you know, contributing to really strong starts. So important.
So important. Hey, Tori.
Hi, my name is Tori Rasmussen, and I'm a special education teacher at Roseburg High School. This is my fourth year there. It's my seventh year in education. I started as an IA and moved my way up from gen ed teacher with Christine at Green. And then now I'm at the high school teaching special education, math foundations, and it's really important work.
Another one of my hero, you know, in another life, I'll be that good to do that. And you two were teaching partners back in the day.
Year.
1 year.
One
That's
year.
Lovely.
Yep.
It's awesome. Well, thank you and welcome to the show. Hi, Randall.
Howdy, sir. Randall Olson, principal of Horizons Program, which is a foster care program here in town. Most people don't know we exist. In 11 years in Roseburg, I've been blessed to work in alt ed, work at a central office, worked at Roseburg High School, Fremont as administrator, and really settled back into where my passion is, working with kiddos that we'll talk a lot more about that have admittedly a little bit harder road. In addition to the kids that are in the foster care program Horizons, we serve kids who've been expelled in the Ed Center. We'll talk more about those great kiddos and some of their barriers and their resiliency later. But I'm just very blessed to serve with kids that typically need a little more, a little extra. And I'm just very lucky.
Thank you. Allie, how are you?
Hi, good. Thank you. I'm Allie Montelongo. I am the Director of Teaching and Learning here in Roseburg. I've been here for about 6 weeks now. But that said, this is my 25th year in education. I've done everything from teaching elementary school, middle school, assistant principal, student manager, which is like a dean of students, elementary principal, and then was lucky enough to end up here in Roseburg and super thankful and blessed to be here.
It's great to have you. Well, good. Well, let's talk a little bit about our students and summer learning. Randall, you'd mentioned that, you know, we've got oftentimes students will need a little bit more. Not every student has the same kind of trajectory in life or the same experience in life. And learning is different for everybody. We've got teachers here that can attest to the fact that, you know, when you think about an academic area, it could be reading, for example, or math. Some kids, it comes a little easier than others. Some kids need a little more help. So let's talk a little bit about summer programs this year, what was offered to students, and I know we had a number of summer programs this year, and let's talk a little bit about what opportunities students had this year in our community.
In the elementary level, we had a K-5 program. So it was kids going into, kindergarten, actually got 2 weeks of kind of prep and exposure. That was really fun to see those little guys running around on campus. And then the rest of them all the way up to fifth grade. And we had a reading and math focus. And we were also able to put some science in there too, which the kids really liked to have something a little bit different. I feel like it gave some structure to their day because we had a schedule that was very similar to the school year. We had a block of reading time, block of math time, a block of science. They got a recess in there. They got breakfast and lunch at school and snacks. We had so many snacks, boxes and boxes and boxes. So it was good. We had so many kids that signed up. Our site served 3 schools, and we originally had 200 kids signed up. And I think we ended up with maybe 125, maybe?
About that number, yeah.
Yeah, showing up, which is really big compared to previous years. Mm-hmm.
So, well, it's such an important part, right, for the kids when they're getting their start. Many of them haven't sat in a group setting where, you know, they have to sit still and, you know, really focus and work together too, not just sitting still, you know. So the social components are really important for them to have that strong start, for them to, you know, have those expectations. So what is the biggest value that you see in the program for the younger kids?
For the littles, it was all those pieces, getting them in there, letting them see what the school looks like, get just to like where the bathroom is. What are the routines? Mm-hmm. You can't just get up and walk away. Your teacher needs to know where you are so you're safe. All of those things. It was a little scary putting them on the buses for the first time, being so little. But they did great. It was really cool to see all those littles in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Connection's not just a people-to-people thing. It's a people-to-location. So it's really important for them to have something to connect it to. And going to school can be scary for the littles if they've never experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important.
It was funny. I mean, we had our K-5s in there, right? But it was neat with the littles, like our incoming kindergartners, right? I was there on a Thursday when the parents got there.
Yeah.
And that was awesome to actually see how proud their parents were. Also, like, not nervous, but maybe, like, how did it go? And it was actually really great to see. And I was kind of just reflecting on, you know, I think our young kids, sometimes they have an older brother or sister who goes to school, but you haven't done it yet. You kind of have to have your own experience. And boy, their confidence, you could just see, even the 2 weeks they were there, our littles actually was so much higher. They knew what to do. They had the routines down. And it was a good amount of learning for those kids. It was awesome to see.
Yeah, I had a unique perspective of being at the green side. I had the last week, so I saw the second week with those incoming kinders. And I couldn't tell them apart. I was assured by the kindergarten teachers that I should have seen them on day one. But they were 2 hands on the trays, and they really, truly were integrated with the third, fourth, fifth graders. And I said, which one was the kindergarten table? And it was really awesome to see just our kids' strength, our teachers' desire to get those routines established. And those kids that made that commitment are coming in with such confidence. You know, I was new principal as I walked in. You're not the old principal, you're new principal. And so they wanted to show new principal what they had learned, and just to see that pride just from, you know, 4 days of instruction, just really special to walk in and get to see the fruit of all of that work. The team worked for a month. I came in the last week and just got to see, and hopefully was just a lot of gratitude for the work. It was awesome just to see what was already built and how quickly the talent of our teachers and the skill of our team or our teachers come together and just build that very quickly. And with the grant, with a 3-year cycle, with some of the advocacy to our boss, Superintendent Cordes, we don't have to scramble. We don't have to send the bat signal up at the end of May and June, which we've done proudly for about a half a decade. We get to plan. And that was a really exciting part of this year's work, is planning for next year and the year after, just so we don't have to scramble. It's just, we're lucky.
And I also think I had the pleasure of seeing the kinders on day 3, and they were lining up in the hall, and, you know, one of the kinders went in front and the other ones were like, no, remember, you know, so they were teaching each other and really gaining that social emotional aspect of things too, of like, okay, this is how we do this. And then they'd go hang up their backpack. And if another student didn't know, then that one would go help. And so it was really great to see them getting the routine so quickly and helping one another.
Yeah. Yeah, it was apparent everywhere we went. And that's not the only program. So we had our elementary program, which was fantastic, focused on literacy and math and science, the basics. And we know some kids, you know, need additional support through the year. And that was really fantastic. It was a four-day program, 4 hours a day. It was great. It was fantastic. But we have a few other programs. Tori, you want to talk about ESY?
So ESY is short for Extended School Year, and it's a program that we have for our special education students who show a history of losing skills over breaks. And it could be a three-day weekend, it could be a two-week winter break, or it could be over the summer. So we keep track of that data all throughout the year with our amazing special ed teachers. And so at the secondary level, we hosted at Roseburg High School. I got to be a coordinator this year. And we have a section for morning meeting, math, reading. We have a wonderful new unified PE teacher who was able to be a teacher at ESY this year. And so kiddos got that activity time too. And then we did a science/art craft as well. We provide food for the students to breakfast and lunch, transportation, and partnered with our partner sports camp through the YMCA. The kiddos really love it. There's also an elementary ESY as well, but I can just speak for the secondary. And then at the high school, we also host summer credit retrieval and our transitions program for eighth grade to ninth grade for students who we don't want to get lost through the cracks as they transition up, because middle school to high school is scary. And so we had a really good group this year to come up for that program. It was really exciting to see them be excited to come to the high school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is great. A big transition, moving from eighth to ninth. So how does that program look like, you know, in its everyday form?
So for the eighth grade to ninth grade transition, I know about it, but I'm not a leader within it. But I do know that this group was rather large this year. I know that they get breakfast. They do some academics. They do activities. And just to help them feel that they have a place at RHS and have staff members who work at RHS to and have connections with, because connections is a huge thing.
Yeah.
I was also able to attend some of those classes that are also known as Gateway. And they even learn life skills, like how do you send an email to your teacher? You know, and the teachers who were teaching these kids were so real in that they were like, you do not start an email with bro. Okay. You say, dear Mr. So-and-so, you know, if you want something from it, this is what you do. And I just thought it was just a real life skill. You know, if you have your own middle schoolers and you know how they communicate sometimes these days, that it's great to see like, oh yeah, this is how you would send something to a respected adult. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great. I think the nice thing too is it's part of a larger architecture when we think about things like Link Crew and some other things we have in place to make sure in those transition years that kids are welcomed in, that they feel if they're new to the school. You know, it's a pretty big shift. If you think about elementary to middle, it's a huge shift. Like it's totally different, right? You don't have kind of like one homeroom teacher. You're moving to like lockers and seven teachers. So managing that's complicated. The middle school to high school is also a transition. And, you know, we are one at Roseburg High School, one of the only 6A high schools in the state of Oregon that's the only high school. So it's, you know, all the kids go there, but it's large. You know, it's, you know, 1,500 kids. It's large. And I think it's to your point, Dory, we want to make sure kids are seen and they know the routines and they don't feel like they're just in a mass of people. Each individual kid has an infinite value and worth. We want them to know how to advocate for themselves, but also be able to feel that like I can do this. I know how to get places. I know, you know, we want them to know there's options for career pathways and academics and activities and be successful, have a good start. I think in life, we all want a good start, right? And so I do really appreciate the focus on these transitions to make sure it's our expectation that we know kids can do it. if the structures were in place. And so, yeah, it's been really good work.
It's intimidating for younger kids, for both, you know, going into middle school and then going into high school. It's like there are a lot of older kids. It's a new culture that they're not used to. So it's incredibly important that those students are being prepared. So that is great work that you guys are doing.
And it's not just students, it's their families too. I can't tell you how many phone calls I've gotten from very anxious parents and just saying, I have your student. I know what they look like. I've had them over summer school. I know them. They have someone to connect with. I'll be there the first day. So it's not just students, it's their families as well.
Yeah. Great point. You know, one thing that was not surprising to me at all, but was really kind of a moment of pride is being out in the schools, even before kids got there. And there were a couple of days where staff were preparing. And there was just it was so neat to see staff excited in the summertime to be working with kids. And it's such a great group of staff. And I just want to tip my cap to the to everybody, our teachers, our staff who leaned into this opportunity and was so looking forward to spending their summer. Think about this. How can I spend my summer in service to the kids in our community? And it was just neat to be in the hallways. People were excited for the year to start, our summer school year, right? And so I think there's sometimes this perception that like teachers get to the middle of June, like I'm tapping out, I'm done, I don't want to see kids anymore. That's actually not the case. And we had staff so excited to be in a position to help serve kids in the summer. And that is really, really impressive.
Yeah, it really is. Because otherwise, they'd get the summer off. So that's some good-hearted folks.
Yeah. Randall, you'd mentioned initially, so some of these programs are funded by our state school fund dollars, the ESY and the other programs. Those are ones that we plan for. The ODE grant for summer learning was a little different. It was a grant that was competitive in nature. It's ODEs approach this differently in this year than it have in the past. We initially didn't get the funding for it, but I think one thing that's great about that is staff had this mentality of like, it's going to be there. The funding's going to be there. We're planning. I know in some instances, there have been districts that have gotten the funding for grant funding, but haven't had the staff, not necessarily the buy-in, but the belief that we're going to get it. It comes late, like it oftentimes does. But also important to realize our staff was planning for it. We had transportation routes in place, everything. We had our partnerships in place in anticipation of the grant, which we didn't initially get. But you know, after that first week or so, the dollars came in, and it was. I appreciate our staff just having that mentality of like, this, our kids deserve this opportunity, and we're going to fight to make sure the kids get the dollars. So
yeah, and you guys scraped it together too. I mean, not that because you were prepared, but then you know, until you get that final confirmation that it's approved, you can't reach out to all the families and get the kids and all of that. And I'm just so amazed at how quickly your team, you know, gets all of that together and gets these students on board. So what, you know, a lot of our families were curious. So there's a lot of messages coming in about, you know, hey, I want my kid to go to summer school. But that's not the case for every student. So what does that eligibility process look like? What are the requirements for these students?
So for this year, for the summer grant program, it was a lot of teacher nominations around students who they felt could use some extra support during the summer, so particularly around reading and literacy. But again, as was mentioned, it was through a lens of science to make it really fun and engaging for the kids. So that's how it was determined this summer through the ODE grant.
Okay, awesome. That's good to know. And it looks like we're at a break. So we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The conversation continues shortly. This is Your Cue on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. This is Your Cue, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to Your Cue. Thank you for joining us again for the second segment. And thank all of you for your work this summer with helping our families and community out. We also couldn't have done this without some partners, some key people. We mentioned the Partner Sports Club. We also had Boys and Girls Club was another big partner of ours. And so...
Yes, Boys and Girls Club was instrumental in seeing our kids after school and extending their learning opportunities. They had so many fun things that they were doing, like cooking meals. They were exploring outside. They were just extending the opportunities for our students in a way that kids might not have had the opportunity to engage in this summer. So we're very grateful for their partnership.
Yeah, they were they were great.
Such an important service for our families here too. I mean, there are real life barriers behind, you know, the transportation piece and the food piece and all of those things, the extra care that are involved. And you see a lot of that in your work, Randall, right? I don't think we've gone over your program. Can you maybe describe to for our audience to have a better understanding of that?
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. The Horizons program, it's a unique program in the state of Oregon and unique actually across the nation. Fifth year in existence, and it's an investment from ODHS. We are one of one in terms of a significant financial investment to create a school for foster care impacted youth, most of which have been within the system for their entire life or most of it. They haven't been able to find any success behaviorally or academically. And sometimes kids that really struggle, they'll let you know that they're struggling. And so they've bounced and they've bounced and they've bounced in terms of a spectrum of housing instability. They've sort of had the shortest straw. And so for a lot of years, Oregon didn't quite know what to do. I'm sure we've read articles about kids living in or staying in hotel rooms and temporary housing, and they're being shuffled around. Horizons School represents an investment from ODHS, and recently with the LTCT funding, ODE, and to braid some funding to make sure that the students that live full-time in our community and BRS-level programs, Rising Light and River Rock, have a school to come to. It's a school. It's not a room in their program. It's not an online program. It's not one person doing their best. We have a robust staff, multiple case managers. We've created a welcoming community for our kiddos to come and then grind. We don't bring them into our school just to love them to death because we feel sorry for the things that they've been through. Quite the opposite. They are the most resilient, capable. They've already been through the hardest parts of their life. We give them a launch and a respite from that storm to grow skills. We take the same assessments that most students in our nation take with MAP assessment. When we hear about the success of summer school, we have the same success at Horizons. We are currently in a season of all things with financial downturn. We get the blessed opportunity to learn how to do more with less, all programs. But we have, you know, the opportunity to serve those kids that are probably that poster child, literally, for they don't have anything. But outside of our program, you know, we are a Roseburg school, and we're proud to be. But across our entire system, we have kids in our elementary schools, our middle schools, our high schools that haven't been impacted that severely, gratefully, but they do experience missed meals. They do experience sort of a latchkey existence where they are parenting their siblings. When we leave on Friday, we were excited maybe to go out for coffee at our favorite cafe. They're excited for Monday when the food is going to be predictable again. So we get the opportunity to take kids. They get bussed in. They come in every day. There's two different programs, a mostly girls' house and mostly boys' house, and they come to one place and it's all theirs. We're really excited as a staff to take the things that our system believes in. All kids have great strength and power and skills, and our scores prove it. We also get to take them at their lowest moment when they've been passed around and they haven't found a foundation, and we get to provide that. And we're also exploring and growing some of those partnerships to make sure that everybody in town is doing their part. We have a what I've dubbed an interagency monthly meeting. We come and we talk, and we make sure the kids aren't missed. We make sure, hey, make sure this kid is seen. I know they're not in Roseburg, they're in an adjacent community, but you have access to make sure they're well. And so we monitor kids. We just looked at the agenda today for that first month to see, can we serve this kid? Is it our time? Knowing that we get to transition them back into great places in Roseburg. We're excited to do so. And in year five, we're still learning. I'm the third administrator to get to lead that program. But when I introduced myself, I said, in 10 years, I've moved around. I get to sit in the same chair that I sat in before. I'm very grateful to Superintendent Corden for giving me the opportunity to go back into that world. It's very unique. It's not known by many. It's not often talked about because it's hard to talk about, you know, the kids that have been trafficked, that have been harmed, that have been regularly and predictably treated poorly, and they haven't been given a light, and we simply give them that light, and then they meet our expectation. They don't surprise us. They simply meet the expectation we have for them because they're great.
This is such important work. I think, you know, we tend to focus as a community on what's more visible And, you know, this homeless epidemic that we're seeing, we're very focused on it because we're seeing it, right? But this is an area that I don't think is seen as often, right? We are not as aware of the youth that are struggling with homelessness. I'm curious, because you have firsthand experience in this line of work, what kind of, because a lot of times I think that homelessness can translate very, very accurately into hopelessness. Yeah. You know, it's like that's where it starts. And I'm just curious at what point and what kind of care and what are some of the highest needs that you're seeing that require that care? And then also, I would love to hear about like what strategies you found to get them over that hump of hopelessness.
Mm-hmm. I'll start the conversation. I know the team's got a lot of experience supporting kids in similar fashion. Earlier the better. You know, I think that it doesn't matter when you inspire that hope, when you help someone be seen and heard, when you stop and really look at someone dead in the eye and you let them know that it's okay. Like whatever that need is, we're actually here to help. And we don't have to have an answer right away. One story of just how tricky that is. We, you know, in the Ed Center, we serve kids who've been expelled. Sometimes kids get expelled and it's not really the main thing that's going on. One of these young people experiencing homelessness, no one knew about. He's a functioning alcoholic, nobody knew about. We happened to, he unenrolled 3-4 different times and we would go meet him where he was. Sometimes it wasn't always before 5 o'clock or on a Monday through Friday, but we kept going to get him. And then we're like, man, we're about to lose him again. Like, he's in these cycles. He's about to go on a bender, about to run away again. Like, what do we do? Put a couple of GED predictors in front of him. And he perfect score on two of them. 17-year-old human being, functioning alcoholic clinically. Homelessness by every definition. Brilliant. Right. Perfect scores. Not something most humans are capable of. I knew I had a window. And I ran down to my other office and I got to show you a video. You haven't been identified as tag. But you are. 12 minutes into the video, there's a type 4, the dropout type. And I said, you're likely to fail. You're brilliant. And I said, what's your gift? What are you going to give the world? Well, I think I can pump gas on the south side of town. I said, the world. What is your brain? What is your soul going to give the world? And he, I don't know. I've never thought about that. I didn't see him again. That lives with him. He knows he's brilliant. He knows he has a special brain, and he knows he's likely to fit. And he knows that there's a man in a place that loves him. He's always welcome. There is no easy answer. It's just tenacious love for the kids, believing in all kids, even when they don't believe in themselves yet, because they can and they will. Maybe not on our timeline, but we can plant that seed. They'll water themselves later. But at worst, we plant that seed. And at best, we get to see it grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just knowing the knowledge that someone is out there supporting them is different than applying that knowledge to them.
The application is a little trickier.
Yes.
It's easy when it's easy. And when you're in a great moment like this and you're, that sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to do that thing. And then you face your reality. Mm-hmm. And you're going to need multiple opportunities in the batter's box to strike out and get back in there again with people that don't care that you're 0 for 20 with 20 strikeouts. Like, let's go. We're doing this together.
I mean, I'll jump into this real quick. I mean, the Horizons program is Genesis, you know, it was about 5 years ago, right, Randall? And we were, this is something, it's actually the only program that is funded in this way in the state of Oregon. And this is the thing, it's taking the most impacted students that have some real complications in life, oftentimes not of their own. We sometimes think of juvenile youth, like juvenile youth got themselves there. But Randall mentioned, worse often, we have a number of young women who are trafficked, sexually trafficked, oftentimes by a parent, believe it or not. So think about the levels of what that actually means. So we have some kids that are in this space of kind of being broken, feeling hopeless, and need skills and supports. What we found consistently in this program, though, is that they can turn their lives around. We've seen kids that have been on a path where, like, it just doesn't look very hopeful. Like, their future doesn't look hopeful. To graduating, being employed, being great citizens, like, literally the turnaround. So I think as we think about whether it's the homeless issue that's more visible in the community, or whether it be hopelessness in general, what I think we've seen in this program is with the supports and care, And again, it's about building character. It's about supporting kids. It's about having a mentality like Randall talks about. They didn't give a great effort. We're going to get back out at it tomorrow. It's about having that patience, but also expectation. We've actually seen, I mean, consistently, you know, what we hear from the folks at the state, why we've continued to get funding in this is you're actually turning lives around at a rate we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And it is a microcosm of what can happen in a community when we rally behind understanding what the antecedent is, like what's the function of behavior, and then can you get behind supporting that? And so I think the Horizons program has been fantastic, and it probably is something for us to all think about. People can do better if they can grind through that with the right supports.
Yeah, and if we're able to lift those young people up at this stage,
it's huge.
It will change the trajectory of their life.
Yep.
And then they won't end up on the street.
Yeah, it's always easier to start earlier, right? You mentioned that, starting earlier. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, what are some of the things, this is a question for all of us. You're like, what are some of the things happening outside of school that can affect a student's ability to really keep pace academically, to feel connected, you know, to attend school? What are you seeing in the community? Oftentimes we look at like, what does attendance look like? What does achievement look like in schools? But sometimes those are just a window. Those numbers are a window into a broader perspective in terms of like what home life looks like, or, you know, what pressures with social media look like. Or so let's talk a little bit about that. What are you seeing from your professional lens in terms of the things happening outside of school that can impact a student's ability to do well in school and keep pace academically?
There's so many things. How much time do we have? It's pretty much everything under the sun, really. It's I wanted to see my parents because they worked the night shift and they came home at 3 a.m. So I stayed up, and then I missed first period, I missed second period, and I missed two periods. So why go to school at all? Because I want to see my parents. I'm going to school because there's food. I'm going to school because there's someone I connect with. I'm going to school because I'm seeing the same adults. I haven't seen my parents in 3 days. Like, you know, there's so many things, so many things.
And there are our youngest consumers in a world that's kind of tricky for all of us. Like, we think about just any issue we would ever want to think about locally or larger, and we have to decide, is this valid? Is this invalid? Am I trusting this resource? Mm-hmm. And they're like a little sponge. They're trying, like, their brain's literally growing and making all these connections. And more so than I definitely had to, I didn't have to question nearly as much, is this valid, true? Are you manipulating me? Like, all of these different layers, and just that inability to kind of shut that working memory off. Like, it's probably exhausting. I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, and, you know, they've got some structures, supports in place that are pretty blessed and privileged, and they still every day, like, you know, the multiple competitive sports seasons and all of it's just really complicated to be a person. Mm-hmm. And we have high expectations for our kids because they're capable and great, and in some ways more adept at this modern world than, you know, we are. Someone who's learning the tech they've known from day one, but like, it doesn't, I wonder how hard that is, because it's normal for them. They're trying to consume it all, where I'll look at something and go like, I'm not going to attend to that. That's kind of crazy and weird, or doesn't make sense mm-hmm. to my value system. And without that structure, without that brain fully developed, their prefrontal cortex, it's got to be challenging to take all of that in mm-hmm. and then have a coherent thought when adults around them are struggling.
To piggyback off of that, I was just part of a committee last week where we discussed the climate around education and the conversation around education, not just in Roseburg Public Schools, but as a state and as a nation and globally. And it's hard to discern how school was even 10 years ago to what it is now. And we have families who are having children going through the same education system with Roseburg Public Schools. And there may be a disconnect with how school has changed, the resources have changed, the connection in the community has changed. There's a lot of conversation around that of, well, I struggled here, so you're going to struggle. It's like, well, we've changed and we're mm-hmm. growing. We want to learn and meet our community where they are. And I think that's kind of hard to start the conversation, but it's hard to continue it with an open mind and convincing our community to do the same thing.
So, yeah.
I also think going off of what you said, I firmly believe, and I believe that most of us here believe, that if a child can get to school, if they can get access to our teachers and our staff here in Roseburg, they are going to get the best education they can possibly get. And so whatever barrier might be what is contributing, this is what gets them out of it. Mm-hmm. They have to come to our schools. They have to see our staff. They have to see everybody who believes in them and has the motivation and the willingness to move them forward, knowing that they will be doing the best for their lives ahead.
Yeah, there's been kind of this narrative. I mean, we've heard this recently about what's the value proposition of education? Mm-hmm. Does education matter anymore? And there's also another one that I hear often in the community, which is, you know, like Oregon's at the bottom. You know, like Oregon education is really in the dregs, and you know, our kids aren't performing. Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, it's something we look at this often. We're in the work with kids often. What are you seeing in terms of data around how kids are performing? You hear this in the community, like, you know, are kids competing? Like, boy, this state is doing so much better than Oregon, or this country is doing better than our kids. Our kids are way behind. What are you seeing in terms of data, in terms of how our kids are competing across the state, across the nation, and across internationally?
Well, one thing I would say is starting off with our youngest students, our incoming kindergartners, as the state of Oregon has required all school districts to do interim assessments 3 times a year, we're gathering some really good data initially. We've also put into place some really good programs for progress monitoring and then continuing to check that data 3 times a year. But we do see that our kindergartners in general come in at a higher percentage of not being able to read than you might see in other neighboring districts around the state. So even though they're coming in without that, they are leaving kindergarten with huge growth in being able to hear letters, name the sounds, name what the letter is, being able to even show some growth in basic reading at that point. So we're seeing some huge growth there. I think we have some data that shows that our students pretty much across the board are outperforming students at a state level. Now that's like macro, you know, looking at data macro, but it's for the most part, our teachers know the standards. They know what they're teaching. They know how to move students forward. And that's the work that's happening in our schools every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we've brought it up several times on the show, how our students are performing in comparison to the national scores, mm-hmm. and how it's severely underestimated how well our students are doing. And so we have some data that we're going to be showing our audience in the video portion on the after show. So just want to throw that out there. Definitely going to want to check that out. But thank you for the insight. It's really incredible to hear, because we talk about some of those barriers that our youngest students coming in are just getting that extra lift off. It's such an important part of their experience in education.
What, you know, I oftentimes wonder, and talk to community members about, then they'll ask, you know, every parent has a huge care for their kid and they want the best. Is there something as a community, if we've got a young parent listening, grandparent listening, they're thinking they've got a 2-3-year-old, what can we be doing as a community? What can we be focusing on a little bit differently at those early years as families and community members? What can we be focusing on that would help give the kids the skills they need in terms of academically, socially? What things can we be focusing on now? I'm a grandparent to 2 grandkids. I got to spend some time with them. This is on my mind all the time. I've got 4 kids on my own, so I didn't know how to teach reading as a parent. I had no idea. But what kind of things, what advice would you give to the community in terms of whether you have kids, grandkids, there are kids in this community who could use your help? Mm-hmm. What can we be doing as a community to help improve the trajectory of our kids?
Talking to them, not at them. Mm-hmm. Engage them in conversation. A mm-hmm. lot of these kids don't know how to hold a proper conversation. They don't know that back and forth. Mm-hmm. That's so important. Kids don't need to come into school knowing their letters and sounds. Mm-hmm. Maybe some colors. You know, and it's so easy to say, go to the library and get a book, but that's not necessarily, you know, easy for everybody to do, but literally talk to them. Just talk to your kids. Give them that opportunity to talk to you and tell you how they feel. I think that's a big piece.
Yeah. It really is, because we see at the youngest ages the frustration that kids can experience in not being able to communicate their feelings. That, I think, is a huge portion of where kids can really get off track in their behavioral tendencies and their habits is just not feeling heard. And so those early ages are so important to establish a sense of importance and confidence, that the children feel comfortable and confident speaking up for themselves, and that, that practice is key. Yeah.
And it's hard because parents are trying to balance going to work and maybe working multiple jobs and trying to get food on the table and get dinner ready. It's so hard. Have them come stand with you when you're cooking and have them help you.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that, that will make a difference over time. Just in your relationship with your child.
I still remember this so clearly, where I'm like, my wife was trying to teach her kids to vacuum. I'm like, just give me the vacuum. I can do this so much faster. But she's less smart than I am. And she's like, you have to let them vacuum. I'm like, this is taking forever, right? But it's part of like that thing of like, if you're going to cook dinner, have them talk about like, you know, what a turnip is, and have them help, you know, help get the measuring cup out.
Right.
My wife is a genius at like, when we're driving, like having conversations, what did you see out there? Mm-hmm. How was your day? There's so many ways. At the end of the day, I think our kids need our T-I-M-E, in your time, in your L-O-V-E, in your love. And I think the more we can provide structure for them, it helps. I also think the other thing that comes to mind for me is this, like a love of reading.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of early elementary teachers be geniuses at this, of like, to be so excited about this book that's going to come in. Kids are just like, they may not have the reading skills around comprehension or accuracy or fluency yet, but boy, are they intrigued about reading. And there's another huge skill you can give somebody.
Yeah, just by reading to them, right?
Totally.
It shows them the value. So
absolutely.
They might not be able to read yet or pick up on it, but they'll gain the fascination, the curiosity.
And it's a relationship you can build. Like, I read with my kids, right? That's another huge gift.
And background knowledge is so important too. Like, I have so many high schoolers who have never been to the coast before and don't know what that means. And what an ocean is and what a lake is, and they don't know what that is. And it's like, well, let's read a book about it and show a picture about it. Let's watch an academic video on that. And just background knowledge is so important, because you can read something and not comprehend it because you can't connect it to anything.
Yeah.
So communicating that with your kids is really important.
Yeah.
So go outside and start talking.
That connection piece, as I was listening, was a big yes. Yes, talk to them, love on them, give them that time. But it's the connections piece, you know, and that love of learning, whether it's through reading or math or anything, science, but just truly like what teachers are trying to do. If they, hopefully we have this background that they can just make these connections. Like, what does this kid know? Here's where I got to, this standard's important. I got to get here. What do they know right now? And the more that they know coming in helps. That's that magic of what a teacher does. They're trying to make those connections. So if they've been conditioned, they have habits they're comfortable with, I'm going to ask 3-4 questions. And sometimes, why? It starts to make us, in some ways, a little insecure about our why, but just to normalize that journey of like, I don't know why they connect. And just to make those connections, like, that's really what that grandparent can do, that parent can do. And it can look your way. You can do it out with a pocket knife, you're out in the woods walking around, you can do it inside playing video games, but you're just making those connections to create those pathways. And then your teachers, once you get them to us, just bring them to us.
We got
your babies. You bring us those great babies, and they love making those connections, and hopefully they love learning, but we can take care of that.
Yeah.
But if their brain, and they have normalized making those connections, and that, I'm a little uncomfortable, I don't know, to feel okay not knowing, if they can do that, that'd be an incredible partnership when they come in, because they get to fail. They get to not know. They get to explore. They get to embarrass themselves like we all did. We don't have to wait for middle school. We could do that earlier.
It's funny. I had a group of this group this year that's going from third to fourth grade. I had that group in first grade, and they were such readers. I would have to go over and be like, I love that you're reading, but we're trying to do math right now. Can you put the book away? And I had so many kids in that group that would just, they would be hiding books underneath their desk. They just wanted to read. I was like, I love it, but we have to do math.
Yeah.
Well, you just pointed out a really important, another thing that we really all can do with kids too, is that how you started it. I love that you're reading. That positive reinforcement, it's so important to be intentional about that. No matter if maybe you're not even related to a child, but when we're around children, to remember like, hey, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
That sense of hope really instills that sense of confidence that they come to school. It's not as much, like you said, about what they know, but that sense of confidence, they'll apply to everything they do.
Yeah. Yep. Well, just say this. Thank you for all you're doing in our community with our kids. I mean, I often think, and I know this, I've been reminded of this today, that our kids are worth the investment. Our kids are worth the time. There is nothing of a higher value. There's no value you can put on the trajectory of a kid and what they can contribute, what they deserve. Every kid deserves people around them that cheer them on. I think we all need that. And as adults, we figured out, we know how to figure those things out. We still struggle with that at times. Our kids shouldn't have to always have that figured out. We ought to cheer them on. And I'm grateful for people in the community like yourselves and others who just lock into how do we help these kids have a successful future. The kids are our future. There is no doubt about that. And if I've often said, if we love this community like we do, let's focus on making sure this next generation has what they need to be successful. They'll be taking care of us one day, and they'll be in positions to take care of us as our service providers, our care providers, and government, and running schools and running businesses. And so thank you for your all you do to help make sure that these kids have a great start to life and a great trajectory in life.
Yep, absolutely. You guys are doing incredible work that is really going to, the future will reflect what you guys are doing today.
So before we sign off here real quick, I want to give you a few minutes just to give your cue to our audience. And so, Allie, let's go ahead and start with you.
Okay. My cue is just to involve yourself with some kids. And whether that's in person, whether you watch the school board meetings where the kids are presenting, either the high school kids are presenting or the elementary and middle school kids are performing, there's just so much incredible work, incredible talents and strengths that those kids bring. Just familiarize yourself with that. And that's just, it'll warm your heart.
Yeah. Thank you.
My cue for my community and myself is to be intentional to stop. Put down the phone, to look a child directly in the eyes that is yours or someone close to you, and just ask what they're excited about, what's making their life worthwhile, what they're curious about, what they're fired up about, what makes the hair stand up on their arms, and just really connect to what's important to them in that moment, because it will change. In a modern world, we want it to change. Just making sure that we don't miss where they're at right now, because with a 12 and a 14-year-old at home, they are changing more rapidly than I would like to admit. So my cue to myself and others is just to look them right in the eye and ask them how they're doing.
Thank you.
Mine is just think about your children or someone that you love, and think about three things that you love about them and tell that person. It's really important.
That's great advice. Thank you.
My cue is school starting up again. Go to your school and that's around the corner and ask, what do they need? What can I help you with? I guarantee they will find something.
They will.
That they could use help with. Yeah.
They will. And that's a sense of community. And the more we can involve ourselves with these young people, I think the more optimistic I feel every time I'm around these young people and our staff. So thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah. Every time, right? They're incredible.
Yep.
And I just want to say before we sign out to our KQEN listeners, thank you so much for your support. I will miss being on this program for this temporary period of time, but I will be back. And I just really appreciate all of your support. And I do want to let you know as well that I am still directing the content and coordinating the guests. So if you have any ideas on conversations that our community should be having, please do reach out on Facebook Messenger on the Your Q Facebook page, and let me know, because I would be happy to get your ideas here, get us talking about them and getting the right people that you feel would be a good fit for that. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes. Thank you.
Stick around for the after show. We're going to dig a little deeper into some data here in Roseburg Schools and look forward to seeing you there. So thank you.
Keep taking care of one another, Douglas County.
Join us Thursday afternoons from 4 to 5 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, or watch online on the Roseburg Schools YouTube channel and the Your Cube Facebook page. This show is built with our community, for our community. If you have an idea for a conversation that celebrates, uplifts, or educates Douglas County, or know someone that should be featured, connect with us. Reach out to yourq@roseburg.k12.or.us or message the program on Facebook.